I'm Dr. Kim Oberholzer, and I'd like to welcome you to the Grace Rock Ministry podcast. I hope you enjoy today's lesson, and I would encourage you to visit our ministry website at www.gracerockministries.org to learn more. At the website, you'll learn more about Grace Rock and our reason for being, which is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ, to shepherd, mentor, and creatively communicate God's Word. In the meantime, sit back and relax and enjoy today's lesson. God bless. Okay, we are in 2 Kings 15 tonight. I'm basically going to be working out of the text, but with one of these with the kings up. So we're going to be looking at some of the individuals tonight. We've got to Uzziah, so I'm kind of down to the bottom of that one. This is where we were last week when we finished up with Uzziah. I remember he was the one that decided that he was powerful enough that he could take on God, and he walked into the temple where the priests were, and the priest said, "You can't come in here." And he says, "Yes, I can." And then he got smitten. Smitten is not good, but hewn is even worse. So when Samuel hewed Agag to pieces, that means you're chopped up in little bitty pieces. So somebody might smite you and you could live, but if you get hewn, you're not coming back. You're in pieces. So Uzziah was smitten following his son Amaziah. They co-ruled together. Jeroboam II, a couple of prophets in the north, Amos and Hosea. And tonight we're going to be picking it up with this little guy, Zechariah. He's a king. He doesn't rule very long, I think a couple of months. And then Shalom will follow him. And then Menahem doesn't like Shalom, and so he'll kill Shalom. Shalom will kill Zechariah. So they're basically, these bodyguards are killing each other off to gain power to the throne. So we are now in 2 Kings 15. So we'll pick it up there in verse 8. 2 Kings 15, 8, the reign of Zechariah. Let me back up one to verse 7. We'll put Azariah or Uzziah. He's got two different names. He was the longest ruler, the one that got leprosy, 52 years in Judah. And in verse 7 it says, Azariah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the city of David. And Jotham, his son, became king in his place. So Jotham in the southern kingdom will follow his father Uzziah. But in the north, in Israel, we pick that up in verse 8. So in the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, became king over Israel in Samaria for 6 months. Wow. Not even enough time to get started, is it? Well, he did evil in the sight of the Lord as his fathers had done, and he did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam and the son of Nebat, which he made Israel sin. So, what's that problem again? The golden calves. All the way back to Moses and those golden calves. That's the sin of Nebat here. And it just doesn't seem like they can get rid of it. It just thwarts them forever, doesn't it? So, it says in verse 9, he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He didn't depart from him. Verse 10, then Shalom, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and struck him before the people. The Septuagint is putting Zechariah, the Septuagint, Greek translation of the Old Testament, puts Zechariah's death threat here attributed to Jehu, but it's not noted in the biblical text, so it's extra biblical in the sense that it's a Septuagint. But so he kills him and he reigned in his place. So Zechariah gets 6 months, and then he's murdered by Shalom. Now, the rest of the acts of Zechariah, behold, are they written in the book of Chronicles, the kings of Israel. This is the word of the Lord which he spoke to Jehu, saying, your sons to the fourth generation shall sit on the throne. And it was so. So this death of Zechariah is the last of Jehu's line. Now, who did Jehu kill that was so prominent? The nasty lady. Jezebel. Okay, remember? Jehu was the one who was riding up on his horse, and she was painting herself and looking out the tower at Jezreel. It says, Shalom, Zimri, which is like, you're a murderer. Come kill me, you know. So he says, who's with me? Throw her down. And the two guys standing next to her decided, well, let's throw her down. This guy's going to be the next ruler. So anyway, it's like the Wicked Witch of the West. Bam, then the horses rode over. That was so cool. That would be a moment in Hebrew history I'd like to go back to. Do you ever have moments you'd like to go back to certain dates or see things? Where would you like to go in Hebrew history? I'd like to see Jezebel come out of the top of that tower. I think that would be pretty cool. I don't think I'd want to go with Jonah inside of that fish. I wouldn't mind being on the road to Emmaus, because in an afternoon it says that Jesus taught them the whole of Scripture in an afternoon. And I thought, wow, that'd save a seminary education. Just walk 3 hours on the road to Emmaus with Jesus. Of course, he has to be resurrected. But anyway, well, let's move on. We'll meet another character here. Shalom. Notice he is in Israel also in verse 13. Shalom, son of Jabesh, became king in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah. And he reigned 1 month in Samaria. So we get a whole month with Shalom. Then Menahem, the son of Gadai, went up from Tirzah and came to Samaria and struck Shalom, son of Jabesh, in Samaria. Now, Menachem had previously been Jeroboam the second's commander in the army. So I tend to think there must have been like a coup d'etat going on here, an overthrow of the government by the military at this point. Of course, their military and government were all in one, kind of like what's going on in Iran today. You might make a note of that. When the political and the religious are inextricably woven together, you cannot negotiate with either part of them. It's driven by theology to destroy whoever they're going to go destroy. So I don't think we've got a whole lot of hope in putting peace treaties out there in the Mideast, but we'll give it a shot while we're here, huh? So then Menachem, son of Gadai, went up from Tirzah. He struck him and he killed him and became king in his place. And how much do we learn about him? Now the rest of his acts of Shalom and conspiracy are in the book of Chronicles. So now we're burning through these puppies tonight. Okay, now we go to the reign of Menachem in Israel. It says, then Menachem struck Tipshah. We're not sure if that's a person or a location, and all who were in it and its borders from Tirzah, because they did not open to him. Therefore he struck it, and he ripped up all its women who were with child. So this is a really nasty verse where he was going through the Mideast killing ladies who were pregnant. And then it says, and this was a pagan practice, incidentally, in the 39th year of Azariah of Judah, Menachem, son of Gadai, became king over Israel. He reigned 10 years in Samaria. So we have a little bit longer than a month and 2 months here. And it says he did evil in the sight of the Lord. And he did not depart all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel sin. Now we get introduced to a new character in verse 19. It says Pul, P-U-L, or Pul, the king of Assyria, came against the land. Now, the king of Assyria it's Tiglath-Pileser III. Not the first, not the second, but the third. And Pul is his throne name. So, you could put TP3 next to it if you need it for a doctoral exam, which I actually have next to mine. He's also noted in 1 Chronicles 5, but he'll have 3 invasions against the north and the southern kingdom here in his lifetime. But anyway, Tiglath-Pileser or Pul came against the land, and Menachem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver so that his hand might be with him to strengthen the kingdom under his rule. So he's paying tribute, 37 tons of silver is paid to Tiglath-Pileser. And then it says, Menachem extracted the money from Israel, even from all the mighty men of wealth, from each man 50 shekels of silver, to pay the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria returned and did not remain in the land. So the wealthy people ended up being taxed quadruple what they normally would be taxed. Does this have a familiar ring in history somewhere? And this is really like the government decided they wanted the money, so they just got it. Now, didn't we see something like that in Greece recently? Where all the retirement accounts, all of a sudden a third of them disappeared overnight into the treasury of the government. So not much is new under the sun, is it? So you can't get it from poor people, so you got to get it from who? The rich people. Well, they've got their share. What can I say? You didn't build that. What in the world is that? So anyway, the king of Assyria returned. He did not remain in the land. Now the acts of Menahem and all he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles? Yes, they are. And Menahem slept with his fathers, and Pekahiah, his son, became king in his place. So, good thing you're not taking this for credit. You'd have to learn all these people. Then the reign of Pekahiah, he's going to have a 2-year reign. So in the 15th year of Azariah, isn't it interesting that they measure the northern kingdom's rulers against the longest southern kingdom's rule of 52 years? You can put those other guys, about 6 of them in place. While the southern kingdom has one king, they've got 6 coming and going. Of course, when you only reign two years or a month, that makes it a little difficult. So in the 50th year of Azariah, the king of Judah, verse 23, Pekahiah, son of Menahem, became king over Israel in Samaria. He's in Samaria, that's the north of Israel, and he reigned 2 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and he made Israel sin. So we're back to those golden calves again. Then Pekah, the son of Remaliah, his officer, conspired against him and struck him in Samaria in the castle of the king's house. Notice with who? With Argob. What a great name. Means eagle. And Aria means lion. So he's got a couple of co-killers here. So Argob and Aria. You know, if I could name my kids again, I might do that. That'd be cool names. Argob. Argob Oberholzer. Wow. And that would be a name. Wouldn't get confused with anybody else, would you? And with him were 50 men of the Gileadites. Now the Gileadites are on the east side of the Jordan, and Samaria is in the north. So you've got this Syrio-Ephraim connection up here in the north that are trying to unite with each other, because way over there is Assyria, and they want to try to get Judah to join them in this, but Judah won't join them. So this is up in the north. The Israelites and the Gileadites are trying to form a coalition to protect the northern end of Israel against the Assyrians coming in, but Judah's not going to participate in that, so. And they killed him, and they became king in his place. Now the rest of the acts of Pekahiah, and he did, are they not written in Chronicles? So now we come to the reign, not of Pekahiah, but of Pekah. Okay. He's got a little bit longer. In the 52nd year of Azariah, back down to Uzziah, the 52-year rule. Now we're running out of time because that's all he's going to rule, 52 years. So it's going to be hard for anybody to measure him by Uzziah anymore. It says, in the 52nd year of Azariah, the king of Judah, Pekah, son of Remaliah, became king over Israel and Samaria, and he reigned 20 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, which made Israel sin. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, here we go, Pul, or Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, came and captured Ijon and Abel Beth Makkah. This is just a test to see if I can say these words, isn't it? And there's Jano-ah. This is like Jan-o-ah, my wife. And Kedesh and Hatzor and Gilead. There we go. That was under Pekah's control. And Galilee and the land of Naphtali. And he carried them captive to Assyria. At 733 BC is the first deportation in the north. And there'll be another one to come shortly in 722 when the Assyrians come in and repopulate. Now the rest of the acts of Pekah and all that he did, behold, are they not written in the book of Chronicles? So at this point, we're getting ready to see Hoshea in a moment be set up. But we're right about here. We've come through these guys, Jeroboam, Second, Zechariah, Shalom, Menachem, Pekah, and Pekah, not Pekahiah. And Hoshea is going to be a puppet governor set up by the Assyrians in a moment here. But we're going to move to the south for a moment. So we're going to go from Uzziah or Amaziah, Azariah, not Amma, Azariah, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Hezekiah will be good. We may make it to him tonight, we may not, but Jotham is going to be a good king like Uzziah, his father. So, the reign of Jotham in Judah. In the second year of Pekah, so we're picking up a little bit of chronology of what's going on in the north, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, Jotham, the son of Uzziah, this was the king who was struck with leprosy earlier that we looked at last week, king of Judah, became king. And he was 25 years old when he became king. And he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jerusha, and the daughter of Zadok. What's significant about Zadok? Anybody remember who Zadok was? He was of the good priestly line in the Old Testament. So she's the daughter in a godly family. At least we think. But that doesn't help her husband here at this point. I mean her son. In verse 34, he did what was right in the sight of the Lord. Oh, he did help him this time. And he did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. Except we get to verse 35, and what do we see here? Only. Yep, you're right. It's rock. It's our same little word we keep stumbling on. Only, 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 only. You remember when Jesus says a little leaven ruins the whole lump? It's kind of like that picture. He ruled, he did okay, except. And that's what we have. This is the waffling. Only the high places were not taken away from the people, and the people sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord, which is the north end of the Temple Mount area. It was expanded, that wall was, in 2 Chronicles 26. Now the rest of the acts of Jotham and all that he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles? You know, you got a whole Bible here full of words, and all he gets is he built a gate. Well, I guess that's better than me. I haven't found the only thing I've come close to is Jehoiakim, and he wasn't very good, so I'm still trying to find the Oberholzers in the book of Psalms somewhere. In those days, the Lord began to send Rezin, king of Aram. Remember, if Israel disobeyed Mosaic covenant, he would send foreign invaders into their land. And Aram, as king of Rezin, is going to be a problem. And Pekah, the son of Remaliah, against Judah. So here's this Syrian Ephraimic alliance in the north that's going on. And Jotham slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, his father. And Ahaz became, his son became king in his place. Just want to take a note here. Go with me to 2 Chronicles 27 and looking at Jotham here for a moment. 2 Chronicles 27:7. Well, we'll pick it up with verse 6 because this is an attaboy. A good thing for him. So, 2 Chronicles 27:6, he says, "So Jotham became mighty because he ordered his ways before the Lord his God." Now, the rest of the acts of Jotham, and notice this, here's the little phrase, "even all his wars and his acts, behold, they are written in the book of Kings of Israel and Judah." So, it appears that Jotham had engaged in a lot of different warfare at the time. But we don't know what those are. Those aren't recorded for us. We just get a footnote that he was a great warrior. So back to Kings, our primary text here as we're working through. Now we're going to meet an interesting character, Ahaz in Judah. He was Jotham's son. He took his father's place here. Just thinking through some things. Jotham had great material prosperity during his rule, as did Uzziah. And let's see how Ahaz does here in verse chapter 16. He's going to have a 16-year rule. We're going to talk about two or three issues primarily related to him. Number one is his character in 1 through 4. And then he'll have a war with Pekah and Rezin, Assyria and the other fellow there. And then further he'll have some more apostasy later. But does the name Ahaz ring a bell with any of the major prophets? I'm talking about the big guys. Anybody? It's who? Isaiah. Okay, that'll be who it rings with, because Isaiah 7, the prophecy of the Messiah, is going to come to this particular king. And it's going to be, you'll call him Emmanuel, and he'll be born of a virgin, and so forth. So the 17th year of Pekah, a son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, became king. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And he did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord God, as his father David had done. But he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and even, look at this, made his son pass through the fire. That's a reference to him at least sacrificing one son to a pagan god. And the Phoenician gods, Molech and Ishtaroth and Ashtaroth and all of those, Baal. According to the abomination of nations whom the Lord had driven out from before the sons of Israel. So we don't know how many sons he had, but we do know one of them was burned in the fire there in the valley of Kidron. Verse 4, he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places and on the hills and under every garden tree. So it sounds like they're basically have legalized marijuana and everybody's smoking pot all over Israel. Not too different than Colorado, I guess. Then Rezin, the king of Aram, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to wage war, and they besieged Ahaz and could not overcome him. So they're trying to get Ahaz to join them against Tiglath-Pileser in the north. And so he says, at the time, Rezin, king of Aram, recovered Eloth for Aram and cleared the Judeans out of the Eloth entirely. Now that's down in the Gulf of Aqaba region in the south there. And they have lived there to this day. So to this day we've got some Elamites down there. Everybody knows who they are, but they hang out, I guess. Probably built hotels. This is where Isaiah 7 would fit if you're doing the prophecy thing in here. So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, saying, I am your servant, your son. So he's submitting to Tiglath-Pileser, and Isaiah told him not to depend on the Lord. He says, come up and deliver me from the hand of the Aram, king of Aram, and the hand of the king of Israel who are rising up against me. So he's trying to get the Assyrians to come in and take the Arameans and the Israeli king, the northern kingdom, away. And so Ahaz took the silver and the gold that was found in the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house, and he sent a present to the king of Assyria. That's Tiglath-Pileser III. So the king of Assyria listened to him, and the king of Assyria went up against Damascus and captured it and carried the people away into exile to Kir and Rezin. Now notice, Tiglath-Pileser has captured Damascus now, and the Assyrians will take people from the lands they capture and bring them back to Assyria and then repopulate those lands from other conquered nations. And so northern Israel is now going to be start being repopulated with Gentiles from all over that Tiglath-Pileser had captured, and they will intermarry with some of the Jewish families that are left. And this is the beginning of what race of people? The Samaritans. See, this is where the Samaritans come from. Here we have an international policy of captivity by a major world power that's going to impact biblical history. So when Jesus shows up with a woman at the well in John 4 in Samaria, she's surprised that he would even talk to her because the racial prejudice was so great between Israel and Judah that we know that people from Judah, they don't have any dealings with us. You're not supposed to even, you're talking to a woman in the daytime. You're not supposed to do that. Well, somebody forgot to tell God he couldn't do that. God does what he wants, doesn't he? Anyway, now King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, and he saw the altar, which was at Damascus. Pretty cool altar, TP3 things. So King Ahaz sent Urijah, the priest, the pattern of the altar and the model according to all its workmanship. So I guess they're out checking everybody's altars out, and they like this one, and so King Ahaz sends him a pattern. Well, patterns are us on the web. Here we are, right there, CNN, Camel News Network, coming through. Okay, so Urijah the priest built an altar according to all that King Ahaz had sent from Damascus. Thus Urijah the priest made it before the coming of King Ahaz from Damascus. So now we're going to have the King Ahaz show up. He says, when the king came from Damascus, he saw the altar, and the king approached to the altar, and he went up to it. So Ahaz is doing this. This is a false altar, okay? This is as one professor of mine said, a paradox of piety here. We have a babbling bubble here. So it's like he's doing his religious thing. So he comes to the altar. He went up to it. In verse 13, he burned his burnt offering and his meal offering or peace offering, and he poured his libation, and he sprinkled out the blood of his peace offerings on the altar. Wow. He's doing his religious thing. Nothing to do with really having a heart for God. He's just doing religion at this point. How many people do religion in a week? Most people do religion. You know? It's kind of like that altar that Elijah battled with. The one with the Baal people. There was no voice, no one heard, and no one came. And that's what religion is. It's just empty. A friend called me a few months back and said, now, why do we say Christianity is the only way? I said, well, we don't say that. I thought that's what you believed. I said, no, I didn't say that. Jesus said that. I am the way, the truth, the life. No man comes to the Father but through me. So I didn't say it. Jesus said it. Oh, well, is that why we're the only way? I said, well, let's just take a total right now. Is Muhammad alive? No, he's dead. How about Buddha? No, he's dead. What about Confucius? No, he's dead. What about becoming earth, wind, and fire? No, they're all dead too. Well, how about we start with the one that's alive? They're like, oh, yeah. Sometimes you Christians scare me. You should have known better than that. Let's start with the one that's alive and work our way back. All the others are still in the ground. And I'll just go on and tell you flat out, if Jesus isn't alive, we might as well just all kiss it goodbye. Because there's nothing. There is zippo, nada. You'll come back as an apple tree seed. At least that's what a guy told me in college when I was witnessing him. You're going to come back as an apple tree seed. I said, yeah, you probably will. Mr. Gump. So now let's see what he does with God's wonderful altar here in the north. Verse 14, and the bronze altar which was before the Lord, he brought from the front of his house, from between his altar and the house of the Lord, and he put it on the north side of his altar. So he's rearranging the bronze altar facing the sanctuary entrance to the north side here. So he's not doing it the way God had told him to do it. And then King Ahaz commanded Urijah the priest, saying, upon the great altar burn the morning burnt offering and evening meal offering and the king's burnt offering and his meal offering with the burnt offering and all of the people of the land and their meal offering, their libations, sprinkle it on the blood of the burnt altar offering and all the blood of the sacrifice, but the bronze altar shall be for me to inquire by. So Ahaz wants to have his own private place to meet God. This takes us all the way back to the book of Judges. Some of you may remember the book of Judges. And at the end of the book of Judges, there's three little chapters there in the end that are kind of addendums to the time period. The book closes with everybody did what was right in their own eyes, which is kind of the famous saying of the book. But there's a section in there where some of the individuals were trying to hire the priest from Benjamin just to be their own private priest. So it's like you have your own personal confessor, that, you know, your professional holy man that you bring with you wherever you go. If you were like a basketball star, you'd have your holy man with you, or a football star. I guess it'd be a gladiator in this day and age. But you want to have your own private deal going on with God there. And this guy's the king, okay? The king's supposed to be representative of leading the nation. And now what's he saying? He's saying, I'm the only one that can really talk to God here because that's my special spot. Now, you have a special spot in church where you sit? When we were in Victoria, we had a lady who had a spot. She sat in that spot every week. Even so much that one Sunday we had some people visiting. Now, they didn't know they weren't supposed to sit there. And so I was watching from up front. And I'm watching this unfold right before my very eyes on the holy day of the Lord, the Resurrection Sunday. The young couple comes in and they sit down in the spot. And I'm like, uh-oh. So what do you do? I mean, do you yell out, Deacon, take them out? And then you're like, well, maybe so-and-so won't show up for her spot this Sunday. But they were just about to shut the doors, and lo and behold, guess who squeaks in? Just at the last minute. She's in the door. Oh, no. She's moving. Now she's in the aisle. She's coming down the aisle. And, of course, she's always got, she's kind of like Cruella de Vil, has all these things going on all the time. And then she just kind of stops right in the middle of the deal. And she looks up and she realizes somebody's in her spot. And so she's got all these books and things and she comes walking down. And now I'm standing up to teach. She's standing in the aisle and she's talking to these people. And she's like, so they move down. And do you know that's the last Sunday we saw them? Because you don't sit in her spot. And I asked her later, I said, did it ever occur to you maybe to sit in a different spot when somebody's in your spot? Well, no, that's my spot. Now, I know you think that's silly. I'm sorry?
Does she pay for it?
Well, she didn't pay for it, I don't think. That would have been even better if she paid for it. But I was just kind of like, oh, really? I mean, are we really that petty?
Yes.
Yep, we are. I guess we are sometimes, aren't we? Well, anyway, he's got his own bronze altar for him to inquire by. So Uriah the priest did according to all that King Ahaz commanded. Well, there's corruption of the priesthood, too, along with the kingship. Then Ahaz cut off the borders of the stands and removed the laver from them, and he took down the sea of bronze from the bronze oxen which were under it and put it on a pavement of stone in the covered way, so he's making a porch for himself, for the Sabbath which they had built in the house in the outer entry of the king, and removed the house of the Lord because of the king of Assyria. So he made total architectural changes to God's plan because of the king of Assyria. Wow. This is what you call collapsing to political pressure. Well, let's see. The rest of the acts of Ahaziah, are they not written in the book of Kings and Chronicles? So Ahaz slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. So now we come to the final reign in the southern kingdom here, Hoshea. This will be the last of the northern kingdom. So chapter 17 opens with, in the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, Hoshea, the son of Eli became king over Israel and Samaria, and he reigned 9 years. So he ascends through the line, through ultimately the assassination of Pekah here. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, not only as the kings of Israel who were before him. Now note this king, Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against him, and Hoshea became his servant and paid him tribute. So this will be Shalmaneser the fifth. There we go. Okay. Trying to keep Tiglath-Pileser, then Shalmaneser the fifth is going to rule here. And he's in his place there. This is the son of Tiglath-Pileser the third, although they named him Shalmaneser. He's the number five. And a king of Assyria, so he comes up against Hoshea, and the king of Assyria found conspiracy in Hoshea, who had sent messengers to So. Now, debate among scholars as to this little word So here. Is it an individual or is it a locality, a location? It says, some translate it to So the king of Egypt or So king of Egypt, reference to a person or a place. If it's a pharaoh, it's the 24th dynasty of Tefnekhet. However you say his name, T-E-F-N-E-K-H-T. If it's the Egyptian, if it's a locality, it's just a place there. So that doesn't really matter a whole lot for our interpretive methods here, but he's sending messengers to Egypt to try to get help. And he had offered no tribute to the king of Syria, so now you hear that. The king of Assyria is not going to like that. As he had done year by year. So the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. Wow. And this seems like just a couple of little verses to us right here, but this is a big deal. 17:5 and 6. This is the end of the whole northern kingdom of Israel. 10 tribes in 2 verses. Boom. So the king of Assyria, Shalmaneser the fifth, invaded the whole land and went up to Samaria and besieged it for 3 years. 725 to 722, he besieged Samaria in the north. And in the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria and carried Israel away into exile to Assyria and settled them in Hala and Habor on the river Gozan, and the cities of the Medes. So now we have the fall of the northern kingdom. And here's the sad part of this whole thing. If you go study your Assyrian kings, which I'm sure you'll be doing this week for your quiet times after such a dynamic and stimulating lecture tonight, you discover that Shalmaneser the fifth sieges Samaria for almost the full 3 years. And then just as the city gets ready to fall, he dies and Sargon claims the victory. This is just so unfair. Sargon II claims the victory after Shalmaneser did the siege. So it's like somebody doing all the hard work and then you pull him out of the way and then you go, look what I did. I'm the king of Assyria. Go with me to Deuteronomy 28:64. We want to get a theological perspective here. So let's go back to Second Law. Deuteronomy, do is two and nomos is law, so Deuteronomy is second law. 28:64. Let's pick it up with 58 would be a good place to start, and then I'll jump forward here. Deuteronomy 28:58, if you are not careful to observe all the words of this law which are written in this book, to fear this honored and awesome name, the Lord your God, then the Lord will bring on you extraordinary plagues and your descendants, even severe and lasting plagues, and miserable and chronic sickness, and he will bring back on you all the diseases of Egypt. Those were the 10 plagues of Egypt. of which you were afraid, and they will cling to you. Verse 63, it will come about as the Lord delighted over you to prosper you and to multiply you, so the Lord will delight over you to make you perish and destroy you, and you shall be torn from the land where you are entering to possess it. Moreover, the Lord will scatter you among all the peoples from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth, and there you will serve other gods of wood and stone which you or your fathers have not known. Wow. Remember, the prosecuting attorneys are the prophets, and they say, if you obey, we'll bless you. If you disobey, we will be disciplined, or Israel would be disciplined by the Lord. Now, I'm not drawing an exact parallel with the church and Israel at this point, but I do believe there is a principle, Hosea 6, of sowing and reaping. What you sow, you will reap. So how we live our lives, those decisions that we make each day, to walk in the power of the Spirit or to choose the flesh, to choose this versus that, oh, it's an only, but not a big only. It's a little only, and it's a little only. I'm not going to do that. We really need to do the 2 Corinthians 13 thing. Take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. You know, every thought needs to be submitted to the Lord's power. Otherwise, you end up, the next thing you know, you're moving your altar in the backyard. You know what I mean? You got a sundial in your kitchen. What the heck is this about? Jan, what is this dead lamb doing in the living room? We're moving our sacrifices all around just to please us. And then God becomes our puppet. Instead of Him being the one we worship, we tend to lean. Only. He did good. Only. He did good. Only. See? Think about that when you hear only this week. Somebody says only. You kind of go, oh, I won't do it. I'm not doing it. Whatever it is. Don't do it. Only. Well, in the rest of chapter 17, the king, writer of Kings, is going to give us specifics why Israel was taken captive in the north. So in 7 through 12, we're going to see a variety of reasons, primarily idolatry. So in verse 7, he starts out in 17. Now it came about because the sons of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, who had brought them up from the land of Egypt. Remember, this is the Passover people. From under the hand of Pharaoh, they brought him out from a king of Egypt, a brutal king. And they feared other gods and walked in the customs of the nations whom the Lord had driven out before the sons of Israel, and in the customs of the kings of Israel which they had introduced. And the sons of Israel did things secretly which were not right against the Lord their God. Moreover, they built for themselves high places in all the towns and from the watchtower in the fortified city. They set for themselves sacred pillars and asherim on every high hill under every green tree. They burned incense, this is to the false gods, in the high places, as the nations did which the Lord carried them away to exile before them. And they did evil things to provoke God. They served idols concerning which the Lord had said to them, you shall not do this thing. Now God warns them. He had His covenant. He's like in 13 here through 16a, He's trying to warn them. The Lord warned Israel and Judah through all His prophets, every seer saying, turn, shuv, imperative command, shuv, return from your evil ways and keep my commandments, Mosaic covenant, my statutes according to the law which I commanded your fathers, which I sent to you through my servants the prophets. However, they did not listen, but they stiffened their neck. Yeah, you got a stiff neckedness? East Texas, we don't make a distinction between naked and naked. It's just naked. So don't be stiff-necked. Either way, that's bad. Like their fathers, they did not believe God. They rejected His statutes and His covenants, His warnings. He warned them and they followed vanity and became vain. They went after the nations. Can we be like them? Why aren't we more like them? Why don't we be like them? Why don't we be more like Europe? Why don't we be more like these people? Why don't we be enlightened? You know, open-minded is empty-headed. I don't know if you've ever figured that out, but it really is. If you cling to nothing, you'll believe in nothing. Sorry? Oh, yeah, if you don't believe in something, you'll fall for anything. Isn't that it? Something like that? Close. Probably in Proverbs somewhere. If not, should have been. I got a whole should have been chapter of the Bible. I got my own Bible version after concordance. This should have been in there. God helps those who helps themselves. Should have been in there somewhere. Probably is. Well, let's see what happens in verse 16. The problem is they forsook all the commandments of the Lord their God and made for themselves molten images. Two calves, and they made an Asherah and worshipped all the host of heaven and served Baal. And they made their sons and daughters pass through the fire and practice divination and enchantments and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him. And so the Lord was very angry with them, and he removed them from his sight, and none was left except the tribe of Judah. And also Judah did not keep the commandments and the Lord their God, but walked in the customs of Israel. And Israel had been introduced, and the Lord rejected all the descendants of Israel and afflicted them and gave them to the hand of the plunderers, and he cast them out. These are hard verses, aren't they? He said, when he had torn Israel from the house of David, they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king, and they drove Israel away from following the Lord, and they made them commit a great sin. So we're all the way back to the golden calves here. And the sons of Israel walked in the sins of Jeroboam and did which he did, and they did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel from his sight, as he spoke through all his servants the prophets. So Israel, this is a sad, sad verse. So Israel was carried away into exile from their own land to Assyria until this day. So the writer of Kings may have been post-exilic, who knows. And the king of Assyria, this is Sargon II, because Shalmaneser III had already died. So Sargon II brought men from Babylon and Cutna, from Ava and Hamath and Sepharvaim, and settled them in the cities of Samaria in the place of the sons of Israel. So they possessed Samaria and lived in its cities. So these are people from all over that are being resettled in the north. I find it very interesting when the adversary can't get his way, how he uses natural impulses and desires and warps them into weird things. For example, in Numbers 22 through 26, it's the Balaam, the oracles of Balaam. Balaam wanted to curse Israel, or Barak wanted to curse Israel, and he hired from Mesopotamia over here Balaam, who was the super oracle of the day. I mean, Who do we have now that's talking to the dead? We had a fellow named Jonathan Edwards a few years back that was the crossover guy. You know, he would talk to dead people and this and that. And, well, I don't know. It used to be when we were growing up, Gene Dixon, but yeah, they channel things. And Gene Dixon's been dead so long, nobody pays any attention to her anymore, which is good. But anyway, Balaam would be, if you went to your Safeway or your Kroger or HEB, today, in this day, Balaam would have been on the cover of the Esquire or the Inquirer. I mean, it would have been Barak hires Balaam to come curse Israel. That's what it'd be. Or two-headed baby comes out of Balaam's, you know what I mean, flying saucers from Balaam. I find those things quite interesting, but I don't purchase them. It doesn't mean I might not flip through them to see what the culture's doing at the time. Cut out the coupons, take what I need. And so Balaam comes over to Israel, and he tries no less than four times to curse Israel. And so he goes in to curse Israel, and every time he tries to curse Israel, he blesses them. God won't let him. curse them. So he comes back to Barak, and he says, I can't curse these people. I don't know what the deal is. He says, okay, well, I guess we'll see you later. He goes, okay, but, oh, as he's parting, as a parting gift to Barak, Balaam says, send in the Moabite women. They're hot chicks. Send in the hot chicks from Moabite. And Barak goes, what? He says, yeah, just send in the hot chicks from the Moabites. They're, you know, an aberrant race, and they have a lot of weird, weird stuff. He goes, okay, I'll take your advice. So, guess what Barak does? He brings in the Moabite women, and you know what Israel does? Ooh, they intermarry right and left and sideways and upside down. Nasty Moabite women. Yes, sir. Woo, hot chicks. Well, I got my chick from Moabite. Yeah. Well, then now they have to kill them all. Well, because God says, no, you can't have Moabite women. We got to kill them all. Got to kill your Moabite chick. Doesn't work that way. And God says, this is wickedness. It's just wickedness. And the adversary uses every kind of ploy he can. If he can't get you through traditional lines, he'll work it sideways. If he doesn't do it sideways, he'll figure out a way to do it up this way. And now we got my own little altar out back. Let's go out back underneath my covered carport and we'll worship at my altar. How special that would be, wouldn't it? Just our little playground. Well, here we go, verse 29. But every nation still made gods of its own and put them in the houses of the high places. The people of Samaria had made in every nation in their cities, and the men of Babylon made Sukkoth, and the men of Kuth-Nergal. And we got a whole group of them here. Look at this in 31. The Avites made Nibhaz, and the Tartak and the Sepharites burned their children in the fire to Adarammelech. And Adarammelech, that's Baal, the gods of Sepharim, of fire. So they feared the Lord, and they appointed priests for themselves in the high places who acted for them. Verse 34, to this day they do according to their earlier customs and do not fear the Lord, nor do they follow their statutes. So verse 40, however, they did not listen, but they did according to their own earlier customs. So while the nations feared the Lord, they served their idols. Their children likewise and their grandchildren and their fathers did so to this very day. And next week we'll pick it up with Hezekiah, because he's going to be a good king. In the south, we finally need a little breath of fresh air here. You know, this is all backdrop to what Marilyn was mentioning, what the grace of God looks like in the New Testament and the Lamb of God who takes away our sin, and how wretched we really are as sinners lost. I mean, we're not as wicked as we could be, but we could be as wicked as we think. And if you think you can't be wicked, then you really are in trouble. Because I have met people who said, I would never be like those people. Oh, yeah, you just did. You just turned it with pride. I mean, I just am so thankful for, I've been bought with a price, the precious blood of a lamb. And I don't want to forget it. I don't want to take it for granted. I don't want to think he's my own private thing to keep. It's just, I've got to get to the New Testament here. This is just heavy stuff in Kings, isn't it? Because they're just like us. They try so hard, and yet they skimp a little here and skimp a little there. And the next thing you know, they're being taken into captivity. Well, next week we'll see some good things. Almost. Not quite. We're going to find another only. It was so close. It was just so close. Oh, you Hezekiah, it was such a good king. And then God said, it's time for you to die. And he starts crying. He says, I don't want to die. Please don't let me die. Don't let me die. He begs God. And God relents. And he lives 15 more years. And guess who's born in those 15 years? He has a son born in those 15 years. His name's Manasseh. He was the most evil king the southern kingdom had ever seen. He's the one that put Isaiah in a log and cut him in half. And if Hezekiah had just gone to be with the Lord like he's supposed to, instead of whining about it, Manasseh never would have been born. Sometimes we don't know what we ask for when we pray, do we? Interesting. Well, that's it for this evening. We'll see you next week, and we'll pick it up with 1 Kings 18 and finish up the study of the Kings.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's lesson and encourage you to visit Grace Rock Ministries' website at www.gracerockministries.org. Our website provides a variety of material to communicate the unchanging truths of God's Word, the Bible. While at the website, please consider donating in support of Grace Rock Ministries. Your donation helps us continue to get God's good news to our podcast listeners. Once again, that's www.gracerockministries.org. Thanks.